Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. This week, I chat with senior food editor Chris Morocco about BA's best chocolate chip cookies. Chris literally spent 2 months conceptualizing, researching, developing, and testing this recipe with something as divisive as what makes a perfect cookie. It was, of course, not an easy process. We go deep on why he made the decisions he made, and we even taste some of his cookies warm out of the oven. And after that, we are airing one of the segments from our live red sauce-themed podcast from a few weeks ago. It's Chris again, this time talking with Claire Saffitz about his recipe for classic tiramisu. Let's do this. Chris Morocco.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
You come bearing chocolate chip cookies, and I was thinking, like, chocolate chip cookies, like, everyone loves chocolate chip cookies.
They do. They do. They love them, and they have big opinions about them,
exactly,
too.
But see, everyone loves a particular type of chocolate chip cookie. They want their chocolate chip cookie.
Right.
And it was your job to make chocolate chip cookies for all. And is that even possible?
I'm on the far side of this project now, and kind of looking back, I sort of think, oh my gosh, you know, the things I didn't know back then, you know, just in terms of trying to please everybody and the hubris of thinking, oh, maybe I could find one chocolate chip cookie recipe to unite them all.
I'm going to say no, but you could make one that, like, hey, this is a really great cookie for what it is. Mm-hmm. And maybe that could be indisputable, that you accomplished. Did you accomplish what you set out to, do you think?
I think I did. I developed a recipe that I think brings a classic chocolate chip cookie into the modern era and puts a BA stamp on it.
Yeah, what's wrong with just the basic Toll House recipe? I think I grew up eating Toll House.
Sure,
you
same.
Grew up eating Toll House.
Yeah.
Are we, quote unquote, misremembering how good they were?
I think a little bit. It's like, you know, trying grandma's old recipes and being like, okay, interesting.
I love you, grandma, but it's funny. So my wife actually made Toll House cookies a little while ago.
Just straight up.
Our son was having friends. There was something going on with kids and stuff. So she's just like literally just bought the, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you smell them in the oven, and that's always intoxicating.
Right.
Whatever kind of chocolate chip cookies are in the oven, we all know that smell, and you're like, oh. But when I had the cookies themselves 2 hours later, they felt pretty, how should I say this, monodimensional.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot going on.
It's not a lot of nuance, right? It's kind of sweet. It's a little bit chocolatey, but the chocolate flavor is a little bit middling.
I want to say back in my day, Maxine Rappaport, a.k.a. my mom, she would do Toll House. I want to say she would do Toll House cookies, but she would then fold in oatmeal.
Ooh, okay.
So it was like an oatmeal chocolate chip cookie.
Not with raisins.
No, God.
But
no.
Just with chocolate chips.
No, there were literally no raisins in the Rappaport household growing up. And that at least gave it some dimension.
Oh, yeah. Well, so you get a little bit of texture.
A little crunch and stuff. And we're going to talk about this. We're about to go deep in your new BA's best chocolate chip cookie recipe. This also goes back to the 70s and before. She would always insist on half butter, half Crisco shortening.
Oh.
So in her mind, the butter introduced flavor to the cookie, but the Crisco kind of kept it crisp.
That crisp, tender, kind of melt in your mouth kind of quality. My grandma, honestly, you know, she used all Crisco in her pie crusts, and nobody was complaining at the time.
No.
You know?
That's also because you didn't know.
We also didn't know. Now I know, but still. Yeah, I mean, this was a kind of a huge, exciting challenge for me, and it took a while. This was a very deep dive. You know, normally I have a binder, you know, that's like, this would be for like maybe 6 recipes. This is one recipe, and I've got kind of like a half-inch stack of papers here.
Yeah, so you came with this purple folder, mm-hmm. manila folder, with all sorts of notes. I also listened to an audio file of you discussing your process with Alex Beggs and Sasha Levine. It kind of felt like I was like auditing like a bioengineering class senior year. Like you guys, you were using terms like hugely impacts and implications and repercussions and doming. And I'm like, is this? I literally felt we were talking about like polar ice caps melting or something.
Oh, God.
So you're not just like, oh, I'm going to make a yummy recipe. You're going deep on this thing.
Yeah, you have to. Because this is, look, you know, as we've discussed before with recipes where everybody has had it, everybody has a frame of reference for what they want. There is a huge responsibility to analyze kind of what's come before you and think critically about everything you're bringing to the process and about everything that you're asking people to do.
All right, so what was your starting point?
Starting point was I cooked through 6 recipes from people who I, you know, respect and who have, you know, have done chocolate chip cookies. People like Dory Greenspan. I did one of Allison Roman's recipes, not the shortbread ones, a different one that she had done for BA ages ago that I recalled. Lindsay Hunt had done a huge deep dive at BuzzFeed talking about sort of the, you know, the advantages of using melted butter in chocolate chip cookies. Mm. I did Violet Bakery. I did Cooks Illustrated. I did the Jacques Torres recipe that ran in the New York Times, you know, and I had sort of various results. You know, some were good, like the Violet Bakery only uses egg yolks. So there was that kind of like really interesting kind of like yolky, eggy, savory kind of quality to the cookies. However, they domed sort of horribly and were a little bit tough, a little bit in like the kind of like Levain, but not as good as Levain.
Okay, can we talk about Levain? So Levain is a bakery here on the Upper West Side of New York. And so that is this kind of cultish spot where those, I don't even know if I would call those cookies. They are a whole other level of indulgence and gooey and buttery and crackly and that's like a whole, it's a thing.
It's a thing. And it's like, that's an interesting point of view, but like, would we ever call that BA's best?
No.
Like, no, because it's not appealing to
it's
this
like, it's kind
mass.
Of like the, it's kind of like the Bugatti of cookies. Yeah. It's like, you're not going to drive that thing down the street. Okay. Yeah. So you trace all these. Beggs, for instance, Alex Beggs, she was remarking how she always loved the Cook's Illustrated one, and they use brown butter in that one, which I imagine introduces a nice sort of flavor note. Yep. And Cook's Illustrated does all these tests. So like, why wouldn't Cook's Illustrated just be perfect?
Sure. I mean, that's a great point. I mean,
I'm setting you up for take a shot at Cook's Illustrated
right now. No, you know, I mean, look, as somebody pointed out in their 1-star review of my cookie online, never having even made it.
What?
Yeah. You know, they were like, oh, well, this is remarkably similar to Cook's Illustrated. And it's like, well, yeah, because it's remarkably similar to every chocolate chip cookie recipe. Yeah. It's very, you know, precisely proportioned ingredients, you know, that all have to be, you know, proportionate, you know, one to another and have a scaled to fit, you know, kind of 2 sheet trays worth of cookies, you know.
Yep.
So yeah, they're all kind of the same, but it's the details that matter.
All right, so how about we do this? How about you walk us through the recipe and for each step, let us know sort of how you got there and how it might differ from other versions or how it might be similar to other versions that are out there.
Okay. So the first step of this recipe is to just mix together your dry ingredients, you know, similar to many cookie recipes. So we've got all-purpose flour, and right there I have to stop right off the bat and say, you know, the Jacques Torres recipe that's hugely popular for New York Times calls for a combination of bread flour and pastry flour. And, you know, right there, you know, you've kind of like you've asked people to probably go out and get 2 flours that they don't normally have on hand in their homes.
And might not use again.
And may not use again. Exactly.
So part of this also, part of a BA's best recipe is you want it to be excellent, but you want it to be, there should be a, it should be relatively accessible.
For sure. And we were incredibly mindful of that kind of at every turn in terms of what we want what we were trying to ask people to do and, you know, what we didn't want to ask them to do. So point being, you know, did all-purpose flour, baking soda, not powder, and I'll get into that later, a good amount of kosher salt. In this case, it's 1 1/4 teaspoons of Diamond Crystal kosher salt or 3/4 teaspoon of Morton salt.
Morton's kosher.
And
we've talked about this a lot, but different salts have different size
densities,
crystals or grains or whatever, and that affects the salinity level. Always be mindful of that on any recipe Bon Appetit.
Yeah.
We always use Diamond kosher as our measuring stick, right?
Yeah, and we try to call it out, you know, for large quantities when you might need to convert.
Okay, I feel like any dessert, any grown-up dessert these days,
salty.
Like, we love the salt. We didn't know that before. Now we do. I mean, I think we knew it, but we didn't know we knew it. So now everything is like salted caramel or salted whatever. The notion of salt within the batter as opposed to, or not necessarily in addition to, the sprinkle of like Malden sea salt on top.
Yeah, you know, I did that in a previous version, the, you know, specifically the Malden on top.
In addition to the one in the batter.
In addition to the salt in the batter. And Andy came down really hard on it. And
wait, Andy Baragani didn't like something?
Andy ruins everything, you know that. He had a fair point though, which is that, you know, to us, like, we think nothing of putting flaky salt on a dessert, you know, and calling it, you know, Instagram worthy. For a lot of people, that already kind of renders a potentially a recipe inaccessible. Like, why is there salt on my cookie?
Or do I now need to go out and buy an $8 box of Malden?
Right. Yeah. And again, you know, we of all the things we wanted to ask people to do, like, that was not one of them. And it was a look that I have to say, like, maybe a little bit played out.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. All right.
So next
I find that interesting. It's like a BA's best recipe is does not only comprise what a recipe needs, but also what it doesn't need.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Because it's not necessarily about making the end all be all. Doesn't matter if it takes you 3 days. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to rest the cookie dough.
I'm not resting.
48 hours.
Dough.
Yeah.
No.
Nobody wants to rest the cookie dough. And there were several recipes that were like, okay, now chill for up to 48 hours, but minimum 24. And it's like, come on, you're making cookies here. Like, you want to be eating them within 15 minutes.
Or you
maybe
got like, friends
minutes.
Over at your house. You might have had a few bottles of wine. You decide to make cookies. You're like,
sure.
Oh, no, actually, we can't have these till tomorrow.
Need you
sorry,
guys.
Guys,
back over here on Sunday night.
Yeah. Not happening.
No, thanks. All right, so the next step of the process is browning one stick, 8 tablespoons of butter. And browning it, you know, to the point where it is brown. I mean, you know, not just like lightly toasty, but, you know, taking it right to the point where it is like full on, you know, kind of hazelnutty brown.
Nutty. Yeah. It's bubble. Okay.
So we're transferring that to a bowl. And as soon as it's cooled, just slightly after a minute, we're adding more whole butter to melt into that brown butter.
How much more?
4 tablespoons.
Okay.
And that is a similarity with the Cook's Illustrated recipe, where they're using a combination of brown butter and whole butter. It's something that I talked with Claire a lot about. And the reason is this, and this is where, like, we go full on, you know, kind of like science-y. Brown butter has had all the water cooked out of it. That's how you are able to get the fat to begin to actually toast the milk solids, because it basically the fat climbs above the boiling point of water. Water is driven off, the milk solids toast. Great. So now you have this lovely liquid fat, you know, with all these kind of, you know, suspended, toasted, you know, kind of milk solids in it. However, that butter no longer has water, and water is an essential ingredient for developing some gluten, which you want in the cookie, meaning water is going to act on the flour during the mixing process and
help
develop
gluten.
See,
this was like the bioengineering
part of
the discussion.
Yeah, I know. I tried to keep it real tame here, man.
Okay, I'm just gonna take your word for this.
Okay.
All right, so we have full stick brown butter, half a stick chopped up, put in the brown butter so it gently melts with the water still in there.
Exactly. Yep. And you know, and honestly, like, brown butter is great. Nothing but brown butter, it can be a little bit overwhelming.
Okay.
You know,
right.
So there's a balance there.
So we got
Let's
our
just
fat.
Say. We've got our fat. Now, 1 cup of packed dark brown sugar goes into
What is
that
the deal with the difference between dark brown and light brown?
It just has more molasses. So basically, you know, they're both refined sugars that have had molasses added back into them.
But if I only had light brown sugar in my cupboard,
it should still work, but I really want you to have the dark brown. And this is one of the things, like,
because then I'm
going to
give you, like,
do.
A 3-star instead of 4-star review.
Exactly,
and then you're gonna write back, like, well, did you use dark brown?
Right.
And I'll be like, no, I didn't have any. And then you'd be like, well.
I've been going through this on, you know, DMs, like, in Instagram so many times over the past couple weeks. It's been wild, you know, just, like, taking it step by step, you know. And part of why that molasses content is essential is because of the baking soda, which we mentioned as our second ingredient. Baking soda needs the presence of an acid in order to create the reaction you want, to create the leavening you want in the cookie.
God.
Sorry, man.
This is deep.
I know. So
wait, before we get to chemical reactions, but already it seems, you know, talking about like the Toll House version, already we're browning butter, we're introducing dark brown sugar. I can already sense that this cookie is going to have more depth of flavor.
For sure.
Than our Toll House.
Absolutely. You know, because Toll House, it's white flour, it's white, a lot of white sugar, maybe some brown sugar, you know. there's just you're leaving a lot of potential for flavor behind.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
So all right. So we've got our we've got our dark brown sugar, 1 cup packed dark brown. Then you have 1/4 cup of granulated sugar. And now the ratio of dark to light sugar has major implications for the texture of the cookie. So dark brown sugar or light brown sugar, either one of those two will mean a chewier cookie. Granulated sugar will create a crispier cookie. But we found we could tip the scales way further in the direction of dark brown sugar than most recipes.
Okay, I'm going to interject. Emma, are we allowed to taste the cookies now at this point, do you think? Yes, Emma says yes. So you brought, I want to sort of taste what you're talking about as you're talking about.
Oh yeah, go for
it. So we have a tray in front of us of 8 cookies. They're not wafer thin, but they're on the flatter side. They don't dome, they're not bulbous. Maybe they're a little bit convex in the middle, mm-hmm. edged on the sides. They've got a nice crackly sort of like the salt flats in some desert sort mm-hmm. of texture, like the crackles throughout it. These beautiful, glossy, melted chocolate chunks, not chips. When were these baked?
I made these. These maybe came out of the oven 30 minutes ago.
Okay.
Ooh, I got a little bit of that on the audio.
Mmm.
Now, what I really like about what's happening here is you have that kind of audible crunch that's happening on that outer edge of the cookie. Where
exactly,
will,
the very edge, like a pizza crust.
Yeah, it'll like shatter. You know, mm-hmm. I can like crumble that, right? But then the interior is chewy. Mm-hmm. You know, there is kind of like a richness and a moistness to that, and it has like a chew to it.
And I think that's fair to say that's probably what a lot of people want. They want it crispy and chewy.
That's what I heard over and over. Crispy and chewy, crispy and chewy. You know, so this is not, to your point, this is not a tall cookie. This mm-hmm. is not a Toll House cookie that kind of really wants to like stand right up off the baking sheet. There is a little bit of like a kind of like camel hump, you know, a little bit, just sort of sloping into the center. But yeah, it's not a full-on classic profile. Like, we definitely brought our own kind of signature look to this.
And so, all right, so we've got the refined sugar and the dark brown, and that with the melted and brown butter.
Yep.
That allows you to kind of get a crispy and chewy
yep.
vibe. What else
okay.
goes on next?
So into that bowl, 1 whole egg and 2 egg yolks.
I brought my own
iced
Americano.
I'm so
today.
Jealous.
I would have brought
right
you
now.
One, but you literally work in a test kitchen where there's an espresso machine.
I
so.
Know. I have no
you're
excuse
on your own
to be under caffeinated. Yeah. So 1 whole egg, just because the egg white, you know, is going to introduce some moisture to the dough, and you don't want the dough to be too wet. And then the yolks, because the thing that I really liked about those Violet Bakery cookies was that, you know, that yolky kind of savory quality was really nice in there. The yolk also, you know, helps create a little bit of like firmness and controls the spread of the cookie. It also, you know, if you hold this up to the light, there is a sheen.
And these are probably about 3.5 inch diameter.
Yep. That's great eyeball. Yeah.
All right.
3.5 inches. So, you know, a couple people, you know, have mentioned, oh, you know, these spread quite a bit. And, you know, these do. Yeah. It goes from being kind of a 1.25 inch sphere, roughly, you know, to a 3.5 inch wide.
You can kind of see with some of them, it's almost like there's ripples, like mm-hmm. a pebble is dropped in a lake where
yes.
the well is in the middle of the cookie, and then it sort of ripples outwards as it bakes.
Yeah. And honestly, like, they are a little bit like snowflakes, you know, each one's going to be always a little bit
this
different.
This Americano is
oh,
so
God.
Good.
This is just torture. You know, they're some of them bake up a little bit more like crackly, mm-hmm. you know, and some of them bake up a little bit more ripply. And I honestly wish I could tell you I knew the exact reason why. And
I like the fact that they're imperfect.
I celebrate them all.
So you love all your kids, but some more than others. All right. So you have not combined the wet and the dry yet.
No. So the eggs get beaten into the sugar butter mixture, and that's the point at which the dough starts to come together in this kind of opaque, smooth-ish mass that starts to take on kind of like a creamy look. And
hold on. Are we doing this with like a stand mixer, with by hand?
Oh,
does it matter?
Great point. We are doing this with a whisk by hand because
oh,
you
wow.
do not need a mixer for this recipe. You can do this all by hand.
Yeah, I don't want to. I mean, I love KitchenAid, but the whole thing of like, you should be able to make things without owning a stand mixer.
Totally.
God bless a stand mixer, but I don't want to have to go out and buy, drop $400
to
make
cookies. Yeah. You know, I mean, for like, there's certain things, certain desserts. Yeah, I get it. Okay. But for cookies, that was the other thing, you know, like I loved Dory's cookies. She was the first recipe that I tried where it was 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract. And man, you taste that. You taste that beautiful florality of the vanilla. And when you use good vanilla, like the Halala or the Nielsen Massey, it's unbelievable the difference that that makes.
How much do you use?
2 teaspoons.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, Dory. So my feeling was I didn't want people to have to like have a mixer, you know, in order to make this cookie. And that is a real difference with a lot of cookie recipes. So even ones that I really liked, such as Dory's, you know, you're creaming the butter and the sugar together and you're beating air into it, but not too much air, and trying to explain to people the moment that's like, okay, well, this is properly creamed, but, you know, don't go too far or you're going to have a cakey, airy, very light kind of textured crumb.
Nobody wants a cakey cookie.
Nobody wants that, you know?
I want a cookie, not a cake.
So that's the thing. It's like, okay, well, I'd rather give you a slightly more spread out but like chewy, crispy cookie because you can make that by hand.
So you've combined the dry and the wet.
So yeah, then
just till combined and incorporated?
After the eggs go in, vanilla goes in, and then the dry goes in. And at that point, you're not using a whisk. You're just using a rubber spatula. You're bringing that dough together. And then the chocolate chunks go in.
All right. You did not say chocolate chip.
I certainly did not.
So should we call this BA's best chocolate chunk cookie or BA's best chocolate chip cookie?
See, the thing is, chocolate chunks are a thing. They're a thing that you can buy. And this is not that. And there's a specific reason for that. So number one, purely visually,
I love the way
we're
these cookies.
Obsessed
I love the
with
way these
aesthetics
cookies
here,
look.
But maybe just mildly so. Like, this looks like a modern chocolate chip cookie, right?
Well, what do you mean by that?
What I mean is, like, if I give you this same cookie but with chocolate chips in it, you're gonna look at it and be like,
it's more like an emoji.
Yeah, it's like
this is like there's like little tar pits around the cookie where there's like bubbling melted pots of like gooiness.
And there's even a couple places where you can see the surface detail that had existed in the bar of chocolate.
Oh, with the little squares are.
Yeah.
So you're advising what?
So, and chocolate chips, very hard to find chocolate chips above, you know, kind of whatever, 50% cacao. Same with chocolate chunks. It's very hard to find good quality.
You just wanted to say cacao.
I certainly did.
So what
are
we what am I buying?
So you are buying just bar chocolate, 6 ounces of, you know, 60 to 70% bittersweet chocolate that you chop yourself. And this is one of those moments where what I'm asking you.
I'm going to interject. So okay. I do think nowadays you can go to any decent or even like just kind of random grocery store and they all have that shelves with all the different types of bar chocolate
on there. Endangered species on
whether
there.
Whether it's Valrhona or Guittard or what's the one in San Francisco? Ghirardelli.
Oh, Ghirardelli.
Ghirardelli chocolate.
Sorry. Yeah.
And take note of what the percentages are.
Yep.
I think 60 is kind of that still sweet, but just starting to get bitter. Mm-hmm. 70%, the more cacao, the less sweet it's going to be. 70 is, so if you want a more grown-up cookie, lean more 70. If you want it to still be a little bit sweet, lean more 60.
Right.
Fair to say. So it should be up to you as a cookie consumer.
For sure.
How bitter or not bitter you want your
cookie.
Exactly.
And with chips, you often don't have a choice. It's like, I mean, what percentage is like the Nestle, you know, kind of morsels? Like, it's
and
low,
I guess,
you know?
And the percentage gives you a more exact other than just the phrase bittersweet, which could mean a lot of different things.
Exactly. That's a good thing to point out. And, you know, so when you chop the chocolate yourself, you get some of these massive shards that then melt into these
lovely chocolate
pools. On a clean, non-garlicky cutting board with a knife. And not your best knife.
Is there anything worse like when you're making yourself a cocktail and you're like, ooh, I want to make myself like a vodka grapefruit, and you're slicing the grapefruit and you make your vodka soda with the grapefruit, and maybe I did this last night, and then all of a sudden you're like, what does that taste? And you're like, oh, that was the garlic from last night when I made like the spaghetti with tomato sauce.
It's so real. You need a clean cutting board, and honestly, a serrated knife is great. You know,
for the grapefruit or for the chocolate?
For the
chocolate. Really? I always use like a chef's knife and just put my heel down.
I'm never going to use my best knife for something like that, you know? Leave. And then that way you get
irregular
tiny
sizes.
Pieces. Yeah, exactly.
Some little shards, some chunks.
Mm-hmm. So that then disperses through the cookie and then gives you this beautiful, you know, kind of overhead view that I think just like it kind of just defines the look of the cookie and the feel.
So you've got your batter. We call it batter?
Yeah, dough.
Dough. Okay. And then you fold in the chocolate chunks throughout.
Yep.
So they're evenly, relatively evenly, but not perfectly dispersed.
Yep.
And then are we resting this dough?
We're not resting. The only thing, I may update the recipe with some language just that for the dough.
It's like
an iOS
update or something.
Yeah, totally.
They get an alert on their phone.
Oh, I know. Seriously. I mean, most of the photos I've been seeing on Instagram are honestly like fantastic, and I'm so delighted. There are some people.
What's your handle again?
Morocco Chris, at Morocco Chris.
MoroccoCCO. Okay,
just
one
like
R, two C's. Yeah, mm-hmm. At Morocco Chris. Yes, yeah, so you get a lot of these DMs these days.
Yeah, a lot. You know, and I'm trying to repost, you know, like the successes and even some of the fails. Maybe somebody didn't leave enough room for all the cookies to kind of spread on the cookie sheet, whatever. But otherwise, they were looking good. You know, this is if the dough should kind of hold its shape when you go to put it on the cookie sheet. It's going to be soft.
What are you scooping the dough with?
I love an ice cream scoop, but I realize people don't have those.
The ice cream scoop that has a little, that sort of scoops it out.
And exactly.
Like, so if you're going to use, about how big is each?
3 tablespoons.
Oh, 3 tablespoons. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. That's a good amount. Because these cookies do spread a lot. You can really only get 8 per baking sheet, which means you're making 16 bigger cookies total.
I notice on your baking sheet, this is an all-purpose sort of piece of advice, you're a fan of parchment paper?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just it just really saves you cleanup. It allows the cookies to spread and not stick nicely. You don't need to coat it with anything.
Yeah, it's super easy.
Yeah, super easy.
And we have in the test kitchen, we also have the parchment papers that pull out one sheet at a time as opposed to on a roll, which is
exactly because they lie
perfectly
flat. They
fit. Why don't I have that? I need to buy that. Okay.
I'll send you home with some.
All right, so you space them out. About how many inches in between each ball do you think for safety?
3 inches
in between.
Yeah,
okay.
At least.
Yes.
Yeah. I kind of stagger 2 and then 2 offset below. And
oh,
then
I got
two
you.
And 2. Does
okay,
that make
so
sense?
Zigzagging down.
Exactly.
So, all right. When you were ready to bake these finally, Emma, do you want one of these?
Yeah, Emma.
You can come over.
Come
here.
On over.
She's like
happy to wing one over to you.
Yeah, she's super serious. She's got her glasses on today.
Yeah.
Temperature-wise, how much did you go debate or try temperature, or did you know right away what it was going to be?
I want some color on these, and I knew we needed to get that edge to set so that they don't spread too much. So 375 is the sweet spot for getting a little bit of color around that outer edge, getting it to set so that you do then get a little bit of like vertical rise as well as the lateral spread.
How many minutes?
I'm averaging 9 to 10.
And you just kind of eyeball in terms of like as it's starting to get brown but not too brown?
Yep.
Brown on the edges?
You'll see brown around the edges, just firm around the edges, a touch of color across the top. And the only, you know, over-baking them, it's not going to be a bad cookie. It just means you're going to lose some of the chew and you're going to develop a lot more crispiness.
Middle rack, lower rack?
If you've got 2 baking sheets in there, divide them between the upper third and lower third of the oven and rotate if you're getting like massively uneven color. Otherwise, just leave them alone.
Chris Morocco, we can find your BA's best chocolate chip recipe on bonappetit.com now. You can DM Chris. You can share your cookie photos with him on Instagram at Morocco Chris. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Adam.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right. Hi, everyone. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Claire.
Okay, so Chris and I are here to talk about the recipe he developed for Old School Tiramisu that is in the May issue, part of the whole red sauce package. And so Adam And Emma Wurtzman, who helped organize the event, asked me to kind of be the one to ask you about the recipe and walk you through it. What they did not anticipate is that there's a plot twist, which is that I do not like tiramisu. I do not think that it is a good dessert. So basically your job just got harder.
A lot harder.
Because I think your goal needs to be that by the end of this segment, you're going to convince me that it is a good dessert.
Well, I have to try, right?
You have your work cut out for you.
By any means necessary, right?
Right.
Well, so Claire, it just so happens, backstage, I have a tiramisu that I made just for you.
Okay. A whole one.
I didn't want to walk out with like a creepy paper bag, okay. So... It is slumping a little bit because I didn't make it with enough time to let it set fully, but that's fine. We're not
all
focusing
right.
on that.
I mean, you're okay. starting with a handicap.
Thank you.
Okay. What I want to do is tell you everything I don't like about tiramisu.
Yeah. So can you walk me through like what the issue is exactly?
Yes. So first and foremost, and this isn't always a bad thing, it's mushy. I have a problem with the combination of cold and mushy with the ladyfingers. It's just
okay.
like too much of
one.
Okay. Like
I would call that crispy gone soggy, which is something that we occasionally look for in recipe.
But it's like the sameness of the texture to me is sort of unappealing. It's like there's no crunch, there's no firmness anywhere.
There are actually distinct layers, which you'll see here.
Okay, the texture is first and foremost. My other problem, two other problems. One is there's often uncooked alcohol in it, and I like alcohol in desserts, but I want it to be cooked. Like, I don't love, like, sensing an alcohol burn in a dessert.
Touché, but I only put a tablespoon in.
Okay. And we're going to talk about all the different components, so we'll get into it. Third is, like, the cocoa on top. It's, like, bitter and chalky, and, like, I like chocolate flavor, but it's not, like, mixed in.
You love chocolate. I mean, maybe not tempered, but, you know.
All right. Touché.
Pow.
Right. Okay, so all of that said, I'm going to give your version a chance.
Okay,
so I'm gonna
cool.
taste it. Okay.
We're going to try it together. So yeah, I could have used maybe a few more hours just so, you know, I could unmold it and have it actually like hold together.
Right.
Okay, in fairness, like right there, right there on her card, it just says, talk about why I don't like it.
Yeah.
So I feel like I was set up.
You were definitely set up. I have to say, it's
light. It's pleasantly spongy. It's got like a lovely creaminess to it. I feel like the cocoa and just like the touch of rum kind of work to kind of offset the sweetness a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I should love it because there's mascarpone, there's espresso, there's cocoa powder, there's ladyfingers, which, like, what are ladyfingers? We're going to talk about that. But somehow it feels like it doesn't quite add up to some of its parts. But I will say that flavor-wise, I guess it's mostly a texture thing. Flavor-wise, this is very delicious and very balanced.
All right, well, thanks, Claire.
I'll give you it on flavor. Okay, all right, okay. But I guess before we dive into each component, I want to back up slightly because I think unlike a lot of the dishes we think of as being really classic kind of red sauce staples, like spaghetti meatballs, tiramisu truly does come from Italy. Mm-hmm. And my research told me the small northeastern town of Treviso. I did do a little research.
All right.
Oh, do you know what tiramisu means?
Pick me up, right?
Pick me up.
Yeah,
there's like
of the
a
coffee.
Whole backstory. Just Google it about like, how that works. But I know that there's a part of your family that's Italian, so I just want to just first kind of back up and see, like, do you have a personal connection to this? Because I think one of the reasons I don't love it is, like, I didn't grow up eating tiramisu.
You know, the funny thing is I really didn't either. We were kind of a cannoli household. Like, cannoli were just, like, that was, like, the pinnacle, you know? So we'd go to the North End in Boston, and we'd go to Mike's Pastry, and then once we knew better, we'd go to Modern Pastry.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
it was always hilarious trying to get, like, the grumpy teenager, you know, behind the counter to, like, fill the cannoli fresh for us.
Uh-huh.
It was like, that was the play. Like, you got to get the cannoli fresh filled, but nobody wants to give you the cannoli fresh filled. So it just didn't leave you a whole lot of options.
Uh-huh. You got like had all the little chocolate chips on the end.
Oh yeah. The chocolate chips or the weird green pistachios, you know, and your dad was like outside, like revving the engine, like, you know,
right,
like
there's nowhere to park.
Where the hell is this kid? You know? Yeah. There's nowhere to park. But yeah, tiramisu, I didn't, it was restaurant food, you know, to me. And there was a place up the road from where we lived called the Cantina Abruzzi where tiramisu was on the menu. However, I never really ordered it as a kid because to your point, you know, there's a lot of like really aggressive flavors, you know, that like raw, you know, cocoa powder, you know, a little bit of alcohol, a lot of espresso, not a great idea for a young kid, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And on the menu, on their dessert menu, they had this chocolate mousse in this edible chocolate cup, which was just like the last word, uh-huh. you know, in decadence, at least in my, you know, 9-year-old mind. Uh-huh. So this was something that I've really only ever had in restaurants. And, you know, so it was like, it was honestly a little bit daunting to develop one, you know, because you don't have the same frame of reference having, you know, had it like countless times or having made it a zillion times.
Right.
Like a lot of the recipes we make, you know, actually come from things that we do, right?
And there doesn't seem to be one, there's not like one authentic recipe that's out there. So it seems like every cook makes it a different way, every restaurant makes it a different way. So when you were thinking about all the ingredients and components, how did you kind of decide, like, you know, like, well, first, I guess, walk us through what the components are and kind of what choices you had to make.
Right. So, okay. So these are the components. And this is where, like, tiramisu, it is a little bit quirky, right? So the base of it is kind of these biscuits, these ladyfinger cookies, which are really weird. You know, they're super dry. They have no fat in them. Mm-hmm. They're sweet, but incredibly crumbly. I don't know when you'd eat a ladyfinger not in tiramisu. You probably wouldn't want to.
I guess they're in like Charlotte's, which is a dessert. It's like around the edges. But I know there's many different kinds. So you had to find like an Italian, what are they called? Like
Savoiardi. Yeah.
So those are the very dry ones.
The really dry ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's those, which are from like a separated egg foam, you know, kind of sponge, if you want to get technical. Mm-hmm. But you have that, which you then soak in, you know, sweetened espresso or coffee, you know, sometimes with like a little bit of vanilla. And then the other component then is the cream. And there's a lot of different ways to go about making that. So you have mascarpone, which seems to be kind of like de rigueur, you know, for tiramisu. And mascarpone is sort of like, it's like cream cheese. However, it's like Italian cream cheese. So it actually has a lot of fat in it. Whereas like American cream cheese has a lot of stabilizers.
Which is not to hate on Philadelphia.
No, for certain applications, you know, it's fine.
It's the only thing sometimes.
But, and then you have this, you know, usually some people use a meringue actually, like kind of like mm-hmm. as the base for like making this kind of light, kind of creamy filling. But, what I really kind of leaned in on was sort of like this like egg. I don't know what is it? It's like an egg foam, right? So it's like you're beating egg yolks, sugar, and some kind of liquid. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it over like a hot water bath, but it's a nice way to do it in a way that you can, you know, thereby like, you know, kind of cooks your eggs, and people have a lot of issues with like raw uh-huh. egg. But then it's this question of, okay, well, how do you bring these things together, you know? So you usually will have some amount of, like, whipped cream, the mascarpone, and then you have, like, your foamy egg business. Uh-huh. And it's just a matter of how you put those things together.
Right. So talk about some of your decisions. So sometimes you see, like, marsala or, like, a cognac or some other alcohol, but what's in your recipe? It's rum, right?
Yeah, I put just a touch of rum. I mean, in this whole thing, there's one tablespoon of rum, you know, which is obviously not a lot. But mm-hmm. my feeling about Marsala is like, A, like, what exactly is it and who the hell has it, uh-huh. you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, most people have some kind of brown liquor in the back of the cabinet. True. How many kinds of Marsala do you have in your liquor cabinet, Claire?
One.
You even have one.
And it's just Marsala. Whatever. There's just one thing.
Marsala is the brand.
Right. So you basically have like three main components. And what I like about the recipe, it's nice from a cook's point of view because it's kind of like assembly only. You don't have to turn on your oven. You're not baking,
right?
Some kind of pastry component. So you have your ladyfingers, which you recommend just purchasing, right? Don't make
your
own.
Yeah, do not make them. Okay. You'll be miserable.
Yes. I have made ladyfingers before. It's not that fun.
Yeah,
and
no,
then,
it sucks.
Yeah, all you're doing is drying them out to then put more liquid in. So you have your ladyfingers, and then you have your espresso, which is the soaking liquid for the ladyfingers.
Exactly.
And then you have this like creamy mixture that then you're using to layer in between. Mm-hmm. So you were saying like this is your egg foam beaten over hot water bath. Is that technically a... Well, there's like two... One, the French term is sabayon. which comes, I think, from the original Italian, which you might want to correct my pronunciation, is Sabaglione. Is that right?
I just call it Sabayon. Okay. And kind of like, just like draw out some of the vowel sounds a little right. bit. But right. but like, honestly, it's one of those things that's like, it's a little bit fussy, but it's a beautiful thing in and of itself. I mean, if there's one thing about this whole, you know, sort of process that's a little bit intimidating, it's probably making the Sabayon because, again, not that you have to do it over a hot water bath. It's just nice, you know, it's sort of like, it effectively cooks your eggs. You can hold this for, you know, many days. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're kind of like, you have to have like a hand mixer powered, you know, you're not doing this by hand, you know, you're not
you
like,
could if you were really,
if you were like Miss Padmore in Downton Abbey, you know, and had the forearm right. strength. Yeah, right. maybe. But you know, you really want an electric mixer, like ideally for this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's just egg yolk, sugar. And I honestly used water for that component of it. I worked the rum into the soak for the lady fingers. It just felt a little bit cleaner and easier. Mm-hmm. But so the yolks kind of triple or even quadruple in volume. They get like really creamy and they get to the point where you can, you know, sort of drizzle the mixture over itself and it holds a ribbon.
That's my favorite language in all of recipe writing. Is the
holding
slowly,
a ribbon.
The slowly dissolving ribbon.
Slowly dissolving ribbon.
Sorry, this is Chris and I are just being nerdy. I forgot everyone was here. We're just being nerdy about talking about the recipe. So the coffee mixture, does it have to be Italian coffee? I consider Chris, you're probably the foremost.
It's probably better if it's not Italian
oh, really?
Coffee, to be honest.
I would
Sorry.
Say you are the foremost coffee connoisseur that I know. So I trust whatever coffee
thank
selection.
Thank you, I think.
Yes. Well, every day I went to work in the test kitchen, it'd be like, if Chris didn't make coffee, then I was like, just not drinking coffee that day.
Well, you would just Sorry. Show up uncaffeinated and just be like in an absolute like lather about whatever. Right. And just like, Claire, slow down, drink a cup. It's going
to
be fine.
Well, it's like, what do you do if you need a cup of coffee to make coffee in the morning?
Yeah.
That's the paradox. That was always the problem. I couldn't get it together. So it doesn't have to be Italian coffee. You don't need to like
no,
get your little
just,
mocha.
But strong
machine.
Coffee okay. is really, really helpful. Okay. I mean, some people do 100% espresso. I mean, that's like definitely gives us a little bit of a kick, you know,
mm-hmm.
definitely not to be fed to like the under 12s, you know,
uh-huh.
or
right.
the over 70s.
Right. Right. Or the 32s. Like me. I can't handle that.
Right.
So people that have seen like our From the Test Kitchen videos know that in the test kitchen, it's part of the process. We like exhaustively test and taste recipes before they get printed. So can you talk about the like earlier iterations of the tiramisu and what did you change and like what wasn't working?
This was not one of those epic struggles. Like honestly, like making a breakfast cookie without like refined sugar, you know, like that was an epic struggle.
Uh-huh.
Even just like making like donuts the other week, you know, like even that, like I kind of got bogged down trying to get them like exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
But different, you know, recipes have like very different approaches. So like when, you know, often in the development process, we'll look at, okay, well, you know, what is out there? What did other people do? What were their kind of key moments and, you know, how did they decide, you know, how they wanted to kind of chart a path forward? And, you know, the meringue path just seemed weird to me. I think like that yolky kind of quality to the cream here is like really, really, really important for that kind of savory balance and for that a little bit of that richness. So I knew I wanted that. I knew I didn't want Marsala or sherry, you know,
mm-hmm.
or something kind of like esoteric that I certainly don't have at home. And then it was really just a question of like, how do you soak the friggin' dry as hell, like lady fingers okay. in enough coffee so that they're like totally rehydrated, but without falling apart,
uh-huh.
so you what's, know, what and assembling.
What was your technique for that?
I just push it right to the edge and hope it doesn't fall over.
So, and then you have to, so you assemble everything, you get it all, and you chose a loaf pan in terms of dimensions.
I did, yeah, and you can serve like right from the loaf pan, and I probably should have tried to do that tonight, but I got greedy. I wanted to like be able to like, you know, just like show the layers and stuff, and like went for presentation. And just FYI, like as an aside, like normally I wouldn't use a square plate, but I have a feeling this thing took a one-way trip
Chris.
Here is not going to be going back
that
to the
not
test
help.
Kitchen.
That did not help you.
No.
But I think one of the great things about tiramisu is that it is, because it is kind of assembly only, like you get everything together, it doesn't take that long, you can make like an enormous amount of it if you have enough lady fingers.
For
make
sure.
it to feed like 75 people.
Yeah.
Just get like
just
a hotel
not Claire.
Can. Right. Just don't give me any. I'll probably still. I just want to say this. That, like, it's a dessert that I don't prefer. I don't think it's a great dessert. I will still eat an entire portion of tiramisu if it's in front of me. I just want to say, like, that does not stop me. I'm just sort of like, this isn't as good as it could be.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason is because often, like, there's some pretty terrible restaurant versions of tiramisu.
It can be pretty bad.
Because it is kind of like a cook's dessert. There isn't this, like, a pastry component that involves a lot of technique. So.
No.
I'll just say that. So for people that are making this at home, sorry. So, for people that want to make it at home, what are ways that they can riff? I've seen, like, other versions that use, like, they swap out maybe an alcohol, or they don't use coffee at all, and they've seen, like, lemon-flavored versions. So, any ideas for riffing?
I mean, for me, I think all the components are key. Like, I don't know, like, yeah, you could swap out, like, some of the elements a little bit here and there. For me, like, again, like, the real aha is, like, the sabayon. Like, if you go to Via Carota, you know, like Zabayon on top of like fresh berries is a dessert on the menu, and it's absolute like magic, you know, it's like gives you all the thing that like custard or like pudding does, but is like ethereally light. So that would be my play. Just like do that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything I'm missing from the recipe?
I don't know. I don't think so. I just can't believe you don't like it more.
It's just, it's the cold and the wet. It's just not, I can't get behind it.
I just feel like it's this like perfect amalgam of all these different things that like manage to stay balanced and are kind of a throwback, but deservedly so. Mm-hmm. And I just, the fact that you fail to be charmed by it is going to stay with me for
a
while.
Yeah, that's my failure. I don't think so. So is that the final word on getting me to like this dessert?
I think that was it. I don't have anything else in the back, if that's what you mean.
All right. I do think this is an excellent version. That does feel
thanks,
like
Claire.
It is. Oh, I'm trying to make you feel better. I'm trying to think of other food. So I would say Chris and I probably agree on 95%, maybe more, maybe 98%.
But that 5%, like we're not afraid to dig in.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be like a knockdown, drag out kind of battle.
Yeah.
Which is what Adam likes.
Totally.
In case you didn't notice. We just learned about another potential food feud back in like the back room there, I was eating dried mango and Chris was like, that's not a good food.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
It's not for me. Fresh mango all the way, but dried mango, no.
Right. And then peanut butter, that's another one.
Peanut butter, bananas.
Wait, I'm the peanut butter lover. By the way, just so you guys know, Chris is not.
I know Adam feels me about the bananas. It's fine. I work for him, not for you guys.
Right. So I guess stay tuned for future podcasts about Chris.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure
Chris
we can find loads more. We could just do tempered chocolate podcast, too.
No. I'm going to sit that one out. All right. So you can find this recipe in the Bon Appetit's May issue, which is out now, and online if you search old school tiramisu. So have
cool.
fun.
Thanks, Claire.
I'll be making it, but thank you, Chris.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.